Welcome back, y'all, to Why Y'all Working. This is a special segment, Boom or Bust, dissecting what in-person shopping looks like. Is in-person shopping going to keep booming, or is it going to bust and virtual experiences via buying retail and other items become the future for us? Why Y'all Working? Alaire, you had a great point you were going to bring up that you noticed, the story.
Yeah, so one of the articles that we were taking a look at is really talking about renting clothes and how certain apps here in the US and abroad are kind of changing the narrative on that, I guess. I'll read some of this here. The way it works, lenders create profiles where they list their personal clothes with items ranging from designer fashion and vintage to emerging brands for users to borrow at a rental fee. That is very interesting to me. It very much screams securities law to some extent, but it would only scream securities law if the designer clothes or any clothes, therefore, were increasing in value. Now, usually things decrease in value when they get used. However, when we look at these clothes like a business, in and of itself, it's similar to like Vinovest, where you're investing in a bottle of wine, and I guess over time the bottle ages and it gets better, and if it's getting sold more, the stock goes up, et cetera, et cetera. The stock is not necessarily going up here, but designer brands are, I guess, or people who own designer brands are making a killing on apps like this, because for people who can't afford to buy designer, there is a market for people who want to wear designer. So I'm not one of those people, but Michael, you purchase and you divulge in these things and partake. So you may, for whatever reason, want to rent some type of designer. I don't know, some Hermes or whatever. I don't know what is so expensive that you can't buy that you would want to rent, but that would be the situation in which most people would want to rent these things. Some people can't afford even Nocta, for example, which is usually around between the $100 to $300 price point. But they may be able to rent it for 25 quid, which is pound, if for some people who didn't know, or dollars, or whatever the case is. So there is Buy Rotation is an app here in the United States that was started by Ishta Cabri Davies. I'm probably saying that wrong, but she had success in the UK in 2019 when she first launched there. Okay. They're peer-to-peer rental apps. Again, it's interesting because similar to like Poshmark and resellers, like Poshmark is like a one-way street, right? Like you're selling the clothes, and if you want to resell because you don't like the piece that you got from somebody else, you can do that. But if not, I don't like when it comes to things like Buy Rotation and brands like this. I'm not, or Lonehood is another one in the United Kingdom. That I'm seeing an ad for, which is interesting. It says, I got a new outfit worth £155 at Selfridge's sustainable fashion swap shop without paying a penny. Okay, well, that might be a market shop, but some of these things we're saying that they are reducing carbon footprint, but I don't think they are, because if they're shipping these things to you, they're still utilizing planes, trains, cars, buses, trucks, etc., to get to you in terms of delivery and purchase. And then not to mention packaging and whatever the case may be. So
I think they're trying to negate what it would happen if the shirt that was bought, that's another version of it, was like transported to trash, waste fill, and also producing another shirt. They're trying to like subtract it to make it a net zero.
I feel like, and this is like, I'm reading through the article here and it's talking about like, you know, it says, unlike traditional rental platforms, peer-to-peer rental apps task their users with the washing and dry cleaning of their clothes, as well as shipping and handling, which users often work into the final rental price. That's kind of wild. that's like at Airbnb, when I come to rent your house and you force me to wash the dishes, take out the trash. No, like, I can go to a hotel and I have to deal with none of that. Like, you feel me? So there is also the issue of damage and theft to their property. So like, if that happens, then I guess there is an insurance allotted to them so they can recoup that investment. But again, if you're buying so many clothes that you can't wear them, or don't want to wear them so much so that they're ending up in the trash or the landfill, and this is a solution for you to be able to get a little extra money in your pocket, I mean, that really just depends on if you're entrepreneurial or not at that point, right? Because to the brands, especially the designer brands, they don't want to see their stuff ending up in the trash. But I feel like people who have a lot of money and who are constantly buying designer brands are only ever buying designer brands and then throwing them away, unless they are, you know, secondhand gifting them to, you know, a family member or a friend, or reselling them, right? But if you're reselling, again, that's to my point about being a little bit entrepreneurially minded, like you want a little bit of coin in your pocket. So you could create a whole business, multi-million dollar business off of just renting out your clothes if you were a rich person who knew how to be savvy with your money on, you know, designer items and other types of clothes.
And that's the real sustainability that these companies are trying to market to us. Like this clothes, they'll say stuff like the materials used, little to no water was used in making the product. Why don't y'all be sustainable and create a whole renting program? YSL, Gucci, Louis V.
Just make the clothes biodegradable. Like at that point, that's really sustainable. To me, I don't want to be all up in somebody's sweat after they've been in something or they've worn the shirt that I've now rented. And therefore, just because they're not in my circle necessarily, people in my circle aren't going to, like, I get it, but I don't get it at the same time. Like it's about the look for some people. And for me, that I'm not the audience, but for others, that may be something that they like to do. I can't really say whether or not this is, you know, a bust per se. Like, in my opinion, it would be a bust for me because I wouldn't participate, but I do understand the importance of the reselling market. I just don't see that. I don't know. Like shoes, you see that more. Like you see the more cult following around the shoes and the reselling of the shoes. I've never seen a cult following around, you know, a particular shirt drop per se or jacket drop. Maybe a clothing line, right? Yeah. Like again,
V-Lone,
or V-Lone, Supreme, or
Bathing Ape.
Yeah. Babe and stuff like that. I've never seen anybody go stupid crazy. Y13, like I've never seen anybody go stupid over like some designer brand and then be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna make a bag off the resale.
It's like there's a space between if you're getting a suit, a very well made suit, tuxedo for a wedding, you're renting that. If you are streetwear, like you said, those Babe, Supreme, others, you might want to rent that because you're trying to get that picture out. But that Dolce & Gabbana, YSL, really that 70% of like designer brands and money moving around, people aren't trying to rent like a button-down Gucci shirt to wear to dinner. And then, at least I'm not. It's a bust for me in that perspective because for me, I'm going to wear a shirt probably at like 2 to 3 Instagram pictures off, no matter how much. I mean, if it's really expensive, 2 to 3 pictures off, and I'm gonna wear that shirt, but you're not gonna put me on your story. You're not taking no selfies together. It's I'm wearing the shirt, and I might space it out a year in between just to bring it back, make it a bit vintage. But this, like, I don't want to even say mid tier, but this mid to high level designer brands, I would not want to rent a shirt, especially because I associate events in my life. Like, I buy clothes because I know, like, a birthday or something big, I want to have this shirt encapsulate a memory.
Yeah, so, a moment in time. I feel like that's what it's for, right? And that's what I get these different things for. Like, I don't get it. I also get it to wear the thing, too. Like, I don't, like, why wear it just once? Mm-hmm. But to your point, I would wear it, once I wear it at my statement function, I can wear it whenever, and then it'd be cool. Like, you can take pictures or whatever, but I've worn it here, so this is forever stamped as a memory that I have. Again, maybe that's a different customer experience that these brands need to look into now, which is designer needs to be about a moment in time and not a every time thing, because then that even increases, and this may be some gems dropping. I don't know if these brands going to steal it, but it may be interesting to see the narrative change in that direction, because I think that that would also bring back a level of exclusivity that was once there, if that makes sense.
100%. And that couldn't be a more seamless transition into the last point. In line with exclusivity, we have seen a four-letter brand completely populate our timelines, our Google ads. Streamers are making jokes buying APs and Richard Millies for 4 cents.
Dead.
In the world of fast fashion, is Temu a booming store, or is it going to bust like most fast fashion items?
Let me ask you, do you know where Temu was established? Because I think it all matters in the financial details and the infrastructural details of the company. Because if it's anything like the fad that Luckin Coffee was with the, you know, fake like stores everywhere, et cetera, inflated sales, et cetera, like that. Temu popped up just like Luckin Coffee popped up on the stock market. It was a great idea. And now they got all your information, you know? And it's not a company that was based here in the United States to begin with. And I think that that's also part of my issue with Temu and some of these platforms, because, you know, for a while I was even scared of Alibaba, but I know the use case of Alibaba and I trust it now as a result of being exposed for such a long time. Now, when it comes to places like Temu, I'm not sure if I can trust Temu like how I trust Alibaba. You feel me? And even on Alibaba, you still have to be careful because not everybody is who they say they are. So, you know, if you need to make sure that you want to go see somebody's factory, you can ask them and set that and range it up. And you might go see a factory. You might not also, right? So that's kind of where I'm at. I think it's a boom bust situation right now. I think somebody's going to buy it out if that's the case. And again, this is me speaking off the dome at a, you know, I don't know, 36,000 feet view of, you know, the situation with Temu. I think they're doing a partnership with TikTok, I thought I saw. Or at least you can buy things off the Temu platform through TikTok's shopping mechanism that they've integrated into their app now.
Yeah, that brings me to the content sweatshop, just to talk through that as a really trending topic. Anywhere from Singapore to just the overall continent of Asia, there's multiple different houses, apartments, co-working spaces that have these maybe like 5-foot by 5-foot rooms with a nice circle lamp and a hold for your phone. And people are recording content, how-to guides, ads, just building these like 7-second scroll, you know, doom scroll content that features some of these, you know, again, 4-cent ads to boost up the value of these same fast fashion items. It's a big, big thing we're seeing globally.
Do you think that it's going to expand here in the United States even more than it is already? And how do you think that that's going to affect, I guess, traditional advertisers when it comes to competing with this in the future?
I think it might be a boom for small businesses that are building authentic pieces that have a meaning to it. You know, in putting together the show notes, I started to think, like, is the Louis Vuitton, like, Don shoe silhouette, is that patent pending? Or is there a patent behind it? Or is it just, what's the word for?
Trademark?
Open license, yeah. Like,
no. All of their stuff, for the most part, even small businesses, this is like where some of my expertise as a creative kind of comes in, because all of the stuff that I've done research in for even the smallest brands that like put out like their own clothing lines, if you want like a style of shirt not to be used by anybody else or at least licensed out, you have to get that patented or copyright or something like that, because it's the style of the cut, it's the weighting of the fabric, there's a lot of things involved, you know, certain stitch maybe here versus a double stitch there. Like, again, designer brands go through this, they have a strict guideline on how their things come out, so I'm sure that for each of their lines, for their bags, they've had probably a patent of, you know, this is how we do things. And again, patent may be the wrong thing that we're using here, so please, somebody who knows this, correct us, let us know in the comments. It could be a trademark, could be copyright, but I think that we may be using the right one here.
Yeah, on that note, It seems like Temu does not care because they are releasing near replicas of these exact, you know, Louis Vuitton shoe, Air Force Ones. In this space of just a hyperinflation of what people think you'd like, Temu is based in China. The specific, let's see if we can find, it just says a Chinese e-commerce company, which is PDD Holdings. I want to see where in China that's based. Headquarters is in Dublin, Ireland.
Interesting. Tax purposes. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So these small businesses, if you're a black owned shoe shop like Sia Collective, that's building these very innovative but lifelike, it breathes some life into the product, you're going to do so much better because that kid that just got, you know, made fun of because they bought knockoff Air Force Ones from Temu that light up when you click your feet twice like Dorothy, they're probably going to be looking for something cheaper, but still has an authentic tie to who they are and their identity. And Sia Collective, they're offering shoes that are, you know, in that $300, $400, $500 Louboutin pricing, but they have those, you know, V1s, V2, V3 that you can get for $60, $70. So this rise of fast fashion and content housing, which now is becoming this engine to just feed the idea that you constantly need something to people like us, is going to bust. So, yeah.
It's another fad. They come and they go. But I think for right now, it's definitely, I think that like people who do copycat products, and we saw that with Amazon and the reselling, you know, right? Like, certain products would not be like, let's say Stanley Cup is doing amazing right now. There's probably a million Stanley Cup replicas out there on the market, but there's only one Stanley Cup, and I'm pretty sure they have a patent on all of their products. So, and you know, after that whole publicity stunt that ended up being great for them, to be honest, it wasn't really a publicity stunt. That's the whole gag. But that whole situation worked out for them 10 times full because that advertisement, the publicity play they made after that car burning incident, the Stanley being okay, made them a whole bunch of money. And I think that when we're talking about companies who can replicate that same thing, I think that there's a numerous amount of small businesses that they put that same care and attention into their own products to the point where they don't even need to do the marketing and the product does the marketing for them. And the customer experience is that my product is going to exist regardless of whatever godforsaken, like, you know, I don't know, element that comes across. Like, to be honest, I don't think the cup should have been there, but the cup is there. And I'm pretty sure they probably didn't fireproof test it, right? So that was an inadvertent thing that that happened. So anyways, so I'm going to go on a tangent.
For me and for others here, a Stanley Cup, I'm sure as you've seen, has gone viral. It's a thermos. What are you talking about that sparked, you know, this rage?
So on TikTok/Twitter, there was a video going around of a woman talking about how her Stanley Cup survived her car burning. And I don't know if she was in a car crash or something happened with her car. But needless to say, her car was on fire. When a car was not on fire anymore, the Stanley Cup was alive.
Like the
Hulk. Alive and well. It was alive and well in the cup holder. And what was even crazier is that the liquid inside the Stanley was still cold. So, in essence, that whatever they got going on over there is some good quality product right there. Like, I immediately would have invested in Stanley Cup just off of that. Had I not seen them before, I would have been like, oh, their product is here to last. Even if the company shuts down, I know that their products are going to be here for forever. So if that's the case, I think that there will be a reseller market, right? We're talking about things where people may see a quality product or something that they like, and they may price a premium on it now that it's scarce or it's no longer in production. That's happened twice now to some proteins, to some shoes that I've seen.
Cars.
Some cars even, right? So, and even when, you know, companies say that we're not going to, right now, car companies are going to stop creating manual and gas-powered powered vehicles. They are eventually going to be a premium on that. There's already a premium now. Well, not a premium yet because the car market is oversaturated, but there will be eventually a premium on manual cars, manual transmission cars. They've always been cheaper than automatic, but again, they're stopping creating them because they want cars to be automatic, so that way they can shut you down. They need to. And we could talk about that later, but that's probably cool things in CES that people have found out and have seen years and years ago, because they're onto bigger and better things now with the projections and the new things that I've seen on different videos and such. So,
for sure. This has been a great episode. And to close out, I want to get each of our perspectives. I'll go first. I think, you know, we talked about a myriad of different topics, from dissecting some of the biggest businesses and relating our own individual like buying experience to the likes of Amazon, Google, Target, and others. We've been able to provide at least a perspective that I feel like I've grown from just by thinking through the in-shop, in-person shopping experience versus the virtual. Ultimately, I can't say if it's a boom or bust, sorry y'all, but I know it comes down to three things as mentioned. Are you creating something feasible? Can it be done? Is it viable? Is it something that a customer can see themselves using? And then credible, are you either the right founder to make it happen to scale, or will customers see you as a phony, someone that isn't pushing something that they believe in? If you can look at your in-person experience and see and check off all of those boxes, that's an amazing place that I'm sure you want to remain loyal to as a customer, as well as if it happens virtually. But if not, find the right place for you, find the right product, and then find the right way to buy those items. Thank How you. About you?
My takeaway is that I think that in essence, you have to take this trend or this fad and make it a boom or bust for you and your business, similar to how Michael was saying with those three principles. You want to ensure that the customer experience, for me, is a very huge thing. Coming from a travel perspective, which is the industry I'm kind of diving in a little bit more into now because of my interest, that is a very huge thing. The travel experience, the customer experience when it comes to that, customer support, customer service, to be honest, your product is the experience that you're able to provide to someone. And if the experience that you're able to provide to someone is everlasting and irreplaceable in their mind, like you're able to create lasting memories for them, that's something that people want more and more and more of, or they just want to cherish that singular moment that they were able to create or you were able to help create. So, you know, when it comes to applying that to product spaces and product type companies and small businesses that are creating a general experience for their consumers and their customers, I would say you always need to be leading with the customer experience first, thinking and putting yourself in the shoes of the consumer. In my mind, ideally, any small product company is creating a product based out of a need that they've experienced themselves, and therefore they should know that need and that niche enough and well enough to the point where they understand what is needed to be done in that market to create the best experience possible for the problem that they have. And if the product matches that problem and is the solution to that problem perfectly, I don't think that that business will have any problem making it a boom for them when it comes to, you know, this fad that we're in, of whether it be online versus in person. Again, it's the transition to online that may kill the majority of these traditional based businesses or these archaic businesses that are still using, you know, traditional means of management. So that's all I have to say. Again, make it a boom or bust for you. I personally think that it's a bust for the majority of folks. But again, like I said, if you are that company that understands their market, understands their product well enough, you'll make it a boom for yourself and make millions and take that with you.
Absolutely. Signing out on another great episode. We're so excited to what we're going to bring you guys this year. We have a new partnership. We will announce soon more content across many different streams. So again, if you haven't subscribed, subscribe now, like the podcast, tell a friend.
This is why I'm working. All 2024. Heard that.